Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab.
Welcome.
Today we're talking about something that everyone has experience with. There are different roles that you can play with this thing, and most people's experience is probably in one role. And because people have so much experience with it, I would think they might think what they know what they're talking about. However, I'm sitting with the real man who knows what he's talking about on this topic.
Shit.
Today we're going to talk about conflict.
Yeah, it's a fun one. To me, this subject is just amazing because it's at the core of who we really of all animal species, but definitely who humans are. And we just do it so poorly, which is unfortunate. Why I think it's amazing is there's no more crystal clear example of the knowing doing gap than with how we should deal with conflict. We all know what we should do. We've read books, we've seen things, we've watched YouTubes, we understand the importance of rational, level-headed, calm communication, and yet our species is totally incapable of doing so. And because it's very tough to practice the skill without being truly reflective and reflexive. You can't. How do you go practice conflict? You have to have a conflict in order to practice conflict.
Yeah. I feel like it's like one of those topics that everyone experiences, and so people think, oh, I know, or like you said, you know what to do. You just knowing and doing.
Self-knowledge don't cut it. And even with that, even if you know everything and think you're doing those things, how it's perceived in the heat of conflict, that's reality. So no, there's no better example of, well, this is exact. Here's the fact. This is what I said. Yeah, but how'd you say it? That changes everything, especially in conflict.
I've got some good thoughts on that one.
Yeah.
So let's do this. Our audience is growing. And so when I say you're the man when it comes to conflict, right? I mean, you started a company, sparked the discussion. Before that, you did MCS.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's still my legal name.
Ah, Mediation and Communication Services.
Solutions.
Right? Solutions.
Yep.
And so mediation is all about conflict. So that was like one of the core tenets of your first.
Well, yeah, I mean, it still is to me. If people when I'm dead go, yeah, man, he helped me talk about some tough things. He helped me deal with some conflict. He helped me tap into myself so that I can deal with my own shit. I'll have won the game of life. If I can help people understand, you don't need to turn to a judge or an attorney or your neighbor or your mommy or your daddy to solve your disagreements. You can do it. You can do that on your own. I'll have won.
Ooh, that's an interesting thought. That's an interesting thought. So it is about helping others.
Yeah.
You've always been a connector of sorts. Very, very much a hub, if you think about a friend or social network. And so I can see where that becomes an interest of yours. It's probably just been innate.
Yeah, yeah. How I was hardwired, for sure.
Did you find yourself trying to resolve conflicts at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, how comfortable on the couch should I get for psychology?
Yeah.
I'm sure something goes back to my parents' divorce, where I naturally used the idea of mediation and facilitation maybe to try to solve their dispute. Now, this isn't conscious. I don't remember myself doing that, but I'm sure some of it was there subconsciously. Maybe if I can do something and get them to talk that they'll get back together. I don't know. I'm sure that's what a psychologist would say, and I'm sure that that's partially there. But I've always disliked it when my friends aren't getting along. Mm. And I always served, looking back, retrospectively, it's easy to tell that story, but it's true. I definitely served as a mediator role without really knowing I was doing that. I could be a very objective sounding board and listen to different folks. But at the same time, they didn't know I was doing and saying little things to move them a little closer together. even if that meant taking a little creative license. But I was doing it out of the need to help them restore their relationship.
Yeah. Well, and as a hub, you probably ended up in that situation often
because
you would connect people of different groups, interests, backgrounds, and you would get everyone together in a social setting.
Yeah, definitely right? Like to entertain. And when we used to entertain like that, there would always be alcohol.
Yeah, and there comes some conflict.
We well, shit, that. I used to start a lot of it at that point.
Yeah, but yes. But hell, even kids, right? And I think this will be an interesting topic, but kids and conflict is an interesting thing.
Mm.
Even kids, you don't need alcohol, right?
No.
You get some kids together that are unfamiliar with each other, and it's just natural, like social tension.
Distrust.
Yeah, clashing of... It's funny. I was looking at definitions. We didn't do a definition. And the one that I saw, the word clash kept coming up.
Yeah.
Clashing of interest.
Well, that was like the name of my app I created, Clash Coach.
Yeah. So anyway, that was that definition, the most simple one I saw and I liked was clashing of interests.
Yeah.
So.
For me, when you hear conflict, you have to think disagreement. It's a disagreement. Now, most people have a negative connotation of conflict, and that's because it boils up certain emotions that they're uncomfortable with. And usually they think of conflict and in their head, they think like a big argument, like an eruption. Well, it can be that, of course, but it doesn't have to be. Really, if there's a disagreement from my perspective with another human being, there's conflict. Even sometimes if that there can be what's called latent conflict. So there's probably a disagreement, but we're avoiding it and we're not talking about it. There's that. That's still a conflict.
Ah, that's good. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about that more later.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a conflict with kids and a conflict with adults?
Nothing. It's the exact same thing. So that's where I was going to go before you talked about – you just talked to me about you and this Central, your business, and this other company. We'll call them Tomatoes since they had a vegetable name. And just the way you talked about it is exactly how kids would. You talked about it in a fairly condescending way, protecting your turf. Oh, they just do this. There's no difference between how children and adults do it. The only difference is we're more socially aware of our status and reputation, and we feel we need to defend it in a more professional manner. But we're doing the same thing. We're looking at somebody. We're sizing them up. We're looking at their flaws. We're amplifying and talking about those flaws to make ourselves look much better.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. When I think about conflict and I think about kids, I think about like core human nature, like what you want to do. No control of emotion and action, right? So you want to talk about the knowing and doing gap.
Mm-hmm.
Kids close that gap pretty quick, you know? Like my son will absolutely hit somebody.
Yeah.
Like immediately.
Yeah, clearly the tiny kids are different than an adult, but we're Claudia's age, 7.
They're
pretty – she's fairly reasonable with how she approaches conflict. Like, that changes quickly.
It's amazing how quickly. Well, and when I say my son will hit someone, he actually – I mean, he won't. He's 4. He's learned not to do that. But you could tell. It's innate in him.
Right. Well, then we could get into the whole the whole movement of, you're verbally assaulting me and all that, which I'm not on board with most of that stuff.
Right. Words or violence.
Part of that, of course, that is true, but that's more nuanced. But yeah, as a whole, adults are just as irrational and emotional in how we do things. It just looks a little different than what kids do, but we're doing the same thing. It's all about status management, reputation management. Every disagreement boils down to the same 3 conversations going on at once. Those 3 conversations are what happened, the emotions, and my identity. And those are always all 3 wrapped up. So as an adult, some of us are just able to disconnect those a little more easily. As a kid, we don't, and we're just really inarticulate. But Dave, I'll tell you, as somebody who's mediated over 1,000 hours of disputes for family issues, neighborhood issues, employment issues, you can't expect somebody to be at their best when they're at their worst. We are all inarticulate. Even someone like you, who's extremely rational, objective, level-headed, structured for your argumentation, when you're emotionally tied up, you're not going to be articulate, but you're going to be more passionate about what you say and what you believe. But no, this is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just nuts. Yeah. And I love it. I feed on that whole situation because I'm never solving anything as a mediator. I'm simply providing a new game board that we can start to play this new game on that they haven't played this game before. And when I start to see them take their own steps toward one another, there's no more rewarding work I do.
See, I love, while we're still on the topic, while we're still close to the topic of kids, I love kids for these reasons exactly, because – they can help me be better by observing them. Just like you observe conflict, you know, as a mediator, that helps you become better at managing your own conflict because you're a third party, you know, a theoretically neutral third party, which I'm sure is probably
not when I'm involved in my conflicts.
Yeah. And when you get involved in your conflicts, though, at least you've had that time, that practice, you see the patterns, you can recognize, ooh, I'm going down this road. And so it's when you, what you talked about, emotion, right? That being the driving force behind like stripping away your ability to be articulate and rational and measured. And I see that with my kids. And there's something I've told both of them recently, which is like, look, guys, it's okay to feel big feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever they cry, they get upset right after a conflict usually gets escalated. So I'll say, like, feel the big feelings. That's fine, you know, like, but you have to understand how to deal with them correctly, you know? And it's so funny that I can tell them as an adult that, and it seems so normal to me, like, oh yeah, I've got this mastered now.
Right.
So I'll teach it to my kids.
Yeah. I always laugh like when people with companies, especially if you bring up the C word, well, oh no, we don't have conflict here. Yeah. There's no conflict. Oh, cool. So everybody gets along perfectly, ultra collaborative, ultra productive, never been sued. No one here is getting divorced. Yeah. We don't have any disagreement.
We just move forward always.
Decisions together, made perfectly in lockstep.
Instantly. It's just harmony, pure harmony.
The fictions we tell each, but again, it's one of those things. It's very personal. It's like, because communication is treated like breathing, it's unconscious. We just do it. We don't think very strategically about it throughout our normal day. It would be uncomfortable to think, maybe I could do the shit that I'm saying and doing every single day better. That would lead to better work results. That would be a fairly radical transformation or a paradigm shift for someone to make. So I understand why they don't think about it.
That makes sense. Okay, so one of the problems that I have is whenever I disagree with myself in my head, I've got the voice and I'm having to negotiate with my head. But that's different. Right.
I believe it. To me, that's an academic discussion which is worthless outside of academics feeling good about arguing something that has zero consequence in the real world. I don't care if I meet someone and they're like, hey, I'm disagreeing with myself. I have self-conflict. Okay, cool. Great. That's just not how I see it and define it. For me, I'm a practitioner. I don't care if you have internal cognitive dissonance. What I care about is how you interact and bring that into my workplace or into my hobby zone. How are you expressing this between us? What's going on? I'm not in your head. So for me, I'm not interested in the intra conflict.
Okay.
And there's a whole literature on that. Great. To me, that's psychology. And I'm just a little less interested in it.
Makes sense.
I don't know if that answers your point.
No, it does. It totally
does. And it's important. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just interested in the area between. Like I wrote an equation up there. What's it say?
2 + 2 = 4.
What's the most important part of that equation?
I don't know.
The plus sign. It signifies everything that's supposed to happen between the two different signifiers. That's where we fuck up as humans. We don't stop to think, is this a plus? Is it a minus? Is it a divide? Is it a fraction? Is it an exponential? The in-between, in the twos are the individuals. But the in-between, the transaction, the interaction, the energy that's exchanged back and forth, that's where it all gets lost because we don't slow down to think through things and get on the same page about our meanings, our agreements, and our disagreements. So that mathematical formula to me is human interaction. And it's all about what's going on in between. I hear your story, I hear yours, but there's a third, fourth, and fifth story, and it's in between your two stories.
Yeah. One of the things – so that's where it comes down to communication.
Yeah.
Which is obviously something you're pretty versed in. So when – you know, one of the things that I always think about and I think someday we'll have a better way because all we're trying to do is communicate our idea, right? We've got this idea and emotions. It's probably those three things that you wrapped up, right? Emotion, identity.
And what happened? Fact.
And trying to communicate our interpretation of it to another person. And it takes lots of words. And the combination of words brings nuance. And if you're not skilled in your toolbox of words, and your timing and your inflection and all these things that convey meaning, volume, you know, you can communicate something and it's not what you meant. It's not what you feel inside. It's not the true message you're trying to communicate. And that can exacerbate conflict.
Well, let's flip it. You're correct. And that's how, you know, Western countries approach it. And I'm sure most Eastern probably at this point. That's a very sender-oriented approach to communication. Now let's put the impetus on the receiver. People are shitty listeners. So they're only listening for confirmation bias and selective perception. So you could even convey your exact meaning, identity, emotion, facts, but they're going to hear it in a way that fits their ideas. So that's the problem. It's a complicated interaction going on that we just take for granted that we're all on the same page. Yeah, we understand each other. Well, no, we don't. And that's okay. Let's understand that we disagree and why we disagree. That's important.
Man, listening.
That's the huge part. And being a mediator professionally or informally, all you are is a structured listener. That's it. A good mediator is just a structured, uber conscientious listener who's asking good questions, knowing when to back off, knowing when to push, knowing when to say something, when to pause, when to tie back to something said earlier. That's it. All you are is a super structured listener.
Yeah, sometimes I find it so powerful just to listen and confirm understanding. Right?
Yeah.
Like you don't maybe you don't agree at all, but allowing someone to, you know, communicate a message, communicate the what happened, the identity and emotions involved with it to you, and just ask clarifying questions. So what you're saying this?
Is that without trying to lead them to a path that you want them to go to.
Right, exactly. Just trying to purely receive the message and let them know it. That is so satisfying to a person.
But that's it. That's our humanity. We want to be heard, all of us. 80% of what I do on the crisis hotlines, the suicide hotlines, is emotional validation. It's simply listening. That's really interesting. That's tough to deal with. That's a really natural and normal emotion for what you're going through. Tell me more. What's that word mean? All you're doing is listening and probing and validating what they're feeling. And it's a lot of the folks get off the phone as if you're a genie that granted them emotional stability, at least for the moment. And all you didn't do anything other than just listen, affirm, and be there. And man, that's what we all want as humans. Those folks are just in a really tough spot. But everyone, whether you're the most confident person, you're the peacock in the room, it doesn't matter. Everyone wants to feel that their voice is heard by others. And that's why we're obsessed with social media and the media and seeing our name in lights. All of us, to a degree, we want to feel that we got impact and others listen.
So obviously, when you start talking about conflict, the base case that I think of is, why is there conflict? Well, one person wants their way and the other person wants their way. There's also a huge element of what you're talking about where sometimes – that's true. They want their way, but it's less about what getting their way, and it's more about being understood.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And maybe that's where that mediator can come in, because I can remember being young, and when I would argue with someone, especially when I thought that their argument was especially irrational, I can remember thinking, if they're any third party, I could bring any third party into this and convince them to be on my side. That gave me some sort of feeling of solace.
What do you think the majority of people is when I'm put on my official mediator hat? And let's say it's a protracted conflict, or what we'd call an intractable conflict, something that's a big deal and consuming a lot of time, energy, and resources for a couple or for a business. What do you think within 5 minutes during the introductory phase both sides are trying to do? They're trying to get me to agree with their side. Yeah. Very subtly. They probably don't even know they're doing it. Like, you understand what I mean, right? Right? You see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
And it's just such a natural human thing to try to do what you're talking about. My facts are right. Theirs are wrong.
When I was younger, I would not have been subtle about it.
Yeah.
I would have been like, look, this guy's pretty smart. Here's why I'm right, and he's going to agree.
Yeah. It's funny. The other thing, the metaphor I use when I used to teach conflict management and mediation practices, it was fun. That was my favorite class because I didn't have them read any textbooks, because that's horseshit for this stuff. If you want to get good at any skill that involves human communication, get up and do it. and videotape yourself doing it and watch it and do after action reviews and say, holy cow, where did I suck? Then apply some best practices for how you can improve in those areas. So we instantly started doing real world simulations where people had to role play stuff based on real conflicts that I saw in my business life in different areas. And dude, people got into it and the mediators got real practice. And then we'd apply some of the books that we read. And it was just fantastic. But the metaphor for the class, the picture I put on the front of my syllabus at the very top was a giant pile of cow shit. And I said, why is this on the front of the syllabus? And most time by halfway through the semester, kids will be like, because conflict is manure. It's stinky. It's dirty. People don't want to deal with it. They don't want to get their hands dirty. But if you do it right, it makes things grow. It makes relationships grow. If you can structure and deal with that disagreement correctly, conflict, well-managed conflict, is one of the most powerful tools we have. We learn about ourselves during it. We learn about another person. Even if we learn, you know what, I still think you're wrong and we disagree, now we're crystal clear on what we're disagreeing about. And hopefully there's some emotional reciprocation of respect going on, even if there's still the disagreement. That, to me, that metaphor is just, there couldn't be a better one. It's manure. There's pros with it and there's cons with it. Don't avoid it.
So is dealing with conflict well a skill, or is it made up of a set of skills? I'm sure it's made up of
It's a set. And some people are clearly naturally just better at doing it than others. Just like some people are naturally 7 feet tall and can dunk a basketball more easily than someone 5'10" that has to put in a whole bunch more work. They can do it eventually. Some people, probably me in this camp, because of how I'm hardwired, I get an emotional kick out of the disagreement and helping others manage it, or being in it, being open to saying I'm wrong and pivoting. Like that interests me. But not everyone's hardwired like that. I'm a weirdo in that way. Most people are hardwired to not rock the boat, to get along, to accommodate, to try to be collaborative and that type of thing.
Man, maybe that's why you and I get along so well. I am pretty far on the side of, as I've gotten older, I've gotten way more comfortable with conflict. But when I was little, I would do just about anything to avoid conflict.
Yeah. But I think you were drawn to the conflict that I'd create up.
It's weird.
Right.
It's weird. Well, because you're so comfortable with conflict.
Right. And I definitely am. That's why it's just one of the areas that I think it makes up a big component of who we are as humans. And I think we can continue to do it better. But paradoxically, the more we get this stuff in front of us, and I'm holding up my phone, and we got two computers on the table, and we got watches on that beep up to us, and all this stuff, the worse we become at actually addressing our conflicts. Because the more we mediate the conflicts through a screen, or an email, or a Zoom, or something like that, the less we're really going to learn. Because when it's about face to face, you learn much more through the nonverbals, the pacing, the posture, the intensity, and that's all lost through mediated communication, meaning like communication channels, that type of thing. So the worst thing you can do to solve conflict is text. Text messaging is the worst. Then it's emails, then memos, then phone calls, then Zooms, and then face-to-face. So face-to-face is always the best if you can do it.
So the more context, the better.
Yeah, context just means with text. And the things that go with text are emotions, facial expressions, all of the way we communicate. The majority of our meanings and our intentions is usually through the nonverbal stuff we're doing.
That's why texts and emails can be so easily misunderstood.
Correct. Well, we all have a text voice. We have multiple text and email voices. So if you get an email from me, I bet you'll read it in your Zach voice, whatever in your head that sounds like. But let's say you get that same email and now you're pressed at work and there's a time crunch, that the Zach voice might go away and now it's the, oh, this guy's need me to do something voice. We literally hear it in our head in a tone, and that then helps us be like, oh, I need to respond with this. Brevity is another one. With text or email, when somebody's very brief, which we might label efficient communication, people can take offense to that. But you're not thinking through my ideas. Like, there's a lot going on there, and these are the things that lead to problems.
You're
in
like,
the work.
I literally said okay.
In the workplace, right. Or not.
Like, no, you said.
Or not communicating. What are you communicating by not getting back to me? Here's a perfect one. One of our good buddies, and I won't say who, he's like, we just wasted hours editing this document because my bosses who they were on a collaborative SharePoint edit system for a PowerPoint that had to be delivered, and they spent weeks putting this together, and it was going to be a 5-minute delivery. So that's just funny in and of itself to the exec team. And he's like, instead of my boss and his or her boss just making the direct changes, they'd be in the PowerPoint and they'd say, okay, Tom, make this change right here. And it would be like change the to or change out this word and put this word in. And instead of making the change, they delegate the change. But, and it was causing causing resentment for our friend and for his team. And so it's a very small thing. And I'm like, okay, well, what are you going to do? He's like, yeah, I'm going to send him an email. I'm like, can I offer some unsolicited advice? And we talked through how that could be misinterpreted. And I'm like, I'd highly recommend you call. And he did instantly. And they had like a 15-minute conversation over something that small. But that would have instantly been like, you're questioning my authority. I'm delegating. I'm telling you and your team to do this. But he was able to talk through it on a phone call. And they're like, wow, yeah, this is really inefficient.
Not only that, I'm sure the boss was not conscious of how offensive it is to micromanage.
Just condescending. Just do it yourself. Yeah. You're taking longer to click comment, type it in, than just change the word.
Right. It's like we're doing a play-by-play of how wrong this was.
But my point is, that is where projects and relationships and growth in companies are not usually killed by dragons. They're killed by gnats. And the gnats that kill it are these small communication transactions and the small disagreements and resentments that form that we either aren't aware of because we're not conscientious, or that we're just not willing to deal with because the pain point isn't big enough yet. And so I just want people to know the pain point will get there, but you can just sweep a little more often. Just sweep away the bullshit a little more often, and it's okay. It makes you a more resilient communicator in the first place, and it builds trust in your team as you do that together more effectively. Yeah, anywho.
No, that's so true. That's so true. It's crazy because when you think about all the things that you just said there, right? Think about these damn economists. They always want to assign numbers to stuff.
Oh, of course.
Oh, oversleeping costs the United States $4 billion monthly or something, right?
Like, and there's plenty of the GDP numbers about what conflict costs in terms of personnel, escalation management, et cetera, et cetera. There's a million of those. Nobody gives a shit. They care about how does it hurt me in the workplace.
Isn't that nuts? It's like, of course, yes. You care about it. If you own a business, you care, right? You get two employees that get along together and get stuff done, right? You get two employees that disagree and the pace of progress gets halved or quartered. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
everything
just
goes
like
away.
That PowerPoint thing. It took you how long?
Yeah.
This was a 5-minute presentation. What do you all make an hour? There was a whole team of you on this?
Mm-hmm.
We spent $50,000 on this 5-minute presentation? Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it matters to your business, but then on the flip side, it matters to you personally because it's validation of your emotion, identity, and what's going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all you want is validation. That's it.
All of us.
God, that's so eye-opening. It's so eye-opening. As we're talking through this, I am thinking of all the ways I need to apply this and get back to basics.
Well, but that's the key. There's the term. There's going to be 35 things you can do better to manage disagreement more effectively. You need to pick the one thing, the big thing, kind of like the activity we did a while back with the listening. And then that does impact other things in the leadership realm. Well, conflict management is another tool, but there's so many sub skills within that. We'd want to pick the one big one that we really want to do. And you probably just shouldn't willy-nilly pick it. You should probably be a little more objective and systematic about which of those behaviors you'd like to pick. And I could help you that. I'll put together a proposal, $5,000. I'll send it over later.
Consider it signed. Listening is obviously
– you've been proved huge.
The big one that I – yeah, but still, it's like it's easy to improve on something and then – take it for granted again, and then start to slide back into your old ways.
Yeah.
And I've caught myself in a couple instances of that lately where I've been like, you're talking over someone, stop. You know.
But you've caught yourself. Yeah. So you're reflective now. Before you weren't reflective or reflexive. So now you're at least reflective. Ooh, I'm sorry, I'm going to back off. Eventually you'll get to where it's second nature and you're reflexive, where in the moment it's just it quit, stops, or right before you do it, oh, nope, need to pull back on that. Reflective is the first step. This occurred. I apologize. My mistake. Own up to it. Try to be more conscientious. Once you do that more and more, then it's just in the moment you're able to do it way better.
Another thing that I don't do well, and it's probably, again, why I get along with you so well, is I don't proactively connect. I don't proactively reach out, right? It's typically I'll wait for a reason. There has to be a reason for us to get together and connect. And then some of my personal relationships can suffer because of that. And so I've noticed that about myself, and it's something that I'm working on. But I can see it in the listening thing too, man. It's, you talked about these tiny gnats that build up.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They're everywhere.
And just in day-to-day connection and communication, a gnat can form, right? And then I think the other thing that hurts with gnats is if they go unaddressed, time makes them become flies, makes them become horse
wasps.
Flies,
yes, become- absolutely. Time. Huge component of conflict, and it can be positive or it can be negative and exacerbate things, especially if they're uncommunicated, like you're talking about. Huge, excellent point. And with the extending the analogy, the gnat can evolve quickly into a more vicious bug.
Because it builds on what you talked about. Like, well, that's not what I said. It doesn't matter what you said. It's what they heard.
Mm-hmm. Intent versus impact. Well, that's not what I intended. Understood. However, here's the impact that this had on me, on the team, on the business, et cetera, on our marriage.
And it's almost like the game of telephone. I'm sure everyone's done that, right? Like you have a saying, it's probably a few simple words, and then you say it to 100 people. And by the time it gets to the end, something drastically different. Even if it's only between two people, you can say something one time, right? And you might have pure intention. You might have good intention. But if they take it negatively and you don't catch that they took it negatively, and then you move on, and then it festers,
right?
It grows, like we talked about. It can the message that you sent, they can build on it over time. It's like, you know, it's like anything. And then so the example that we talked about it becoming a wasp or whatever, mm-hmm, is that time aspect is important. So what do we do about that?
It depends on the type of conflict, because not all conflicts are created equal. First of all, you got to pick and choose your battles. If you're the person that dives into every little disagreement and you're not in the field of law, you're probably not well liked. So socially, you're probably, and some people thrive on that. You know, Taleb, the author I've been reading a lot lately, he loves that, and he knows that about himself, and he's totally comfortable being extremely argumentative. But the average human doesn't really want to be around someone like that who argues for the sake of arguing and disagrees. But time is usually time is a thief. Time is a thief of our memories. So it can heal wounds, as they say, over time. Or for the angry person, it serves as a way to continue to replay. You just keep hitting replay on that situation over and over, because that's how you got to keep your hate alive. And you just keep replaying it, finding new details that make you more upset. And if you don't express some of that and get that safety valve going, then it boils over eventually and explodes. And that's when usually people want a mediator or an attorney, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how business is a lot transactional. Even if you're on the same team, you know, it's transactional. And people keep score in their head, whether they want to or not.
Well, think of a negotiation, large-scale professional negotiations. Let's take professional sports. When does 99% of the deals get done? Within 48 hours of the trade deadline. Because of time. Everybody's just waiting it out. Let's see if they'll make an offer that's good. We'll just hold back. And it's just time. That's the whole the idea of settling in law prior to going to a lawsuit with a judge and jury. They use time as a resource. You know, JFK talked a lot about that. Time was one of his most valuable resources for making large, important decisions as a president. He wanted to pause and think through and let time help mediate some of those situations on its own. And I thought that was really smart. Pause during a conflict. Small interval pieces of time are extremely important. When the emotions get boiling and really we're talking over each other, pause. Let's take a break. Let's take a walk. Go get some food. Go grab a water. Go call your wife. Small pauses, and then we come back, it's a refresh, it's a reset. Like these small things, I'm telling you, they work when people are in conflict.
Even connecting on something else, right? Like, let's take a break from this. like, hey, man, did you see that game last night?
Oh, yeah, just small talk.
Something to connect on, right? And then be like, let's, all right, we connected here. Let's go back to that other thing. Let's build this bridge. You know, with me, when you were talking about disagreement and anger and replay, with me, I think that it's, I can be, one of my listening deficiencies, right, is active listening. So I can end up missing things. So I won't perceive that gnat exists. And that's a powerful skill, that when that gnat pops up, that tiny conflict, perceiving it, right? And especially when you're in a situation where you are in power, right? So like if you're a team leader, being able to recognize whenever some instructions, directions, feedback you're giving isn't received positively, and there is a gnat that then pops up. If you don't recognize that and deal with it, then it can become something. That's something that I need to get better at. What do you think about that?
I agree. I'm going to share one with you that I guess could be a change challenge. Not that we're at the end here, but you got to come up with your gnat traps. Gnat traps, right? It's what are the small again, because there's so much going on in the human experience, in our lives. Our brains are like computers. We only have so much bandwidth, and there's so many things we want to learn and get better at and practice, but we just can't do it all. So we have to give ourselves tricks, tools, strategies to do it. Well, I'll share a few of mine that are personal related. They deal with Kizzy, my wife. If I notice a behavior that she does around the house, it's small stuff, and I'll share one, it just bugs me. You know, it's like a pet peeve, rubs me the wrong way. But over time, it's just like, are you kidding me? How can't you do this? But I don't want to just bring that up because I know there's a billion things I do that are similar. So what I've done is I say, hey, let's each pick one small behavior that we've been doing lately. And we got to eliminate it. So you get to pick one for me and I pick one for you. And so the one for her that I usually go back to is mail. She'll just open mail and then just leave it out. She'd leave it out for months on the table. And then, you know, there's 800 things I do wrong around the house. Usually it'll deal with level of intensity and patience with the kids or with her, not trying to solve everyone's problems, just listen. But the gnat trap, and you just go back to that. Another one we do. These are superficial things, but these are the gnats. This is where we live. Clothing. And I think I've shared this with you before. Like, if there's a certain piece of clothing I don't like of hers, we do the okay, we each get to pick one thing of the other's wardrobe, and they got to get rid of it. And so we'll do that one. And that one's a fun one, too.
That is a fun one.
So, again, these small things. And there's just different tools and tricks you can do in the workplace, but it's got to be reciprocal. You can't just be like, I need you to change this. That's not fair. What am I doing? Think about it. What can I do differently? One small thing. And then I'm going to bring you one that I'd like you to, and let's make them collaborative.
That's great. That is gold, Jerry.
Gold, Jerry. Gold. Again, small. They sound small and dumb. They're not. We live most of our life in small and dumb. We're in mundane. We're not in milestone most of our life. So I think it's more important to find the little things that happen 1,000 times a day to deal with those more effectively instead of feeling in disagreement or conflict. Rather than the huge things, because those are less frequent.
It's so funny because everybody engages in conflict. And so they think, or they minimize its value and importance in the skill sets, how powerful mastering conflict is. But if you think about it, the masters of the universe in business and power are masters of these sorts of things. They're masters of conflict, masters of negotiation. It'll get you much closer to that than being the best at engineering or whatever. Will,
I would say the masters of the universe, let's just, you know, people with a ton of money running finance or something, they're usually called that. I disagree that they're good with conflict. They've just accumulated enough resources that they can hire others to deal with the conflicts they don't want to deal with.
I guess I'm thinking about the people who make the ascension to power, right?
They've learned to play the game and become very political. And a skilled diplomat. You need to be diplomatic at times, right? Now, some people, there's something what's known as a diplomatic hand grenade. You know, it's like, you bite this off, you throw it over. You know, yeah, I think you're a fucking idiot. That's as diplomatic as I can say it. And people are like that in conflict, man. I'll tell you, they are. And they think they're being diplomatic. That's me holding back. I can't tell you how many times people have said shit like that.
That's real useful.
It's insane. They just won't drop their weapons and get out of the trenches for 20 minutes. The flip side, though, is having good principles that people want to bring into conflict and then overusing them. Honesty. I just need to be honest here. And I just need to share the full truth. Self-righteousness. This is just wrong. And it's wrong. And it's just being principled here. And that's fine. If people want to stick to their principles, it's cool. But what you have to know is you're accepting that the conflict isn't going to mitigate itself in the most pleasant way. And if you're comfortable with that, fine. But no, you're going to make a ton of others uncomfortable. The honesty one's the big one. I just need to be honest here.
Yeah.
And then they just dump everything. It's like, that's not honesty. That's you.
That's ego, right?
That's silliness. Yeah. Right. That's, again, that's the childlike nature, in my opinion.
Yeah, because when you're saying, I'm going to be honest here, it's basically like, I'm going to dump me out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to dump my emotions, my identity.
How much we say, right? The idea of a mission of certain things. You know, you don't have to say every single thing you think, especially when you're in a conflict. But what you choose to share and how you say it is so important. You had mentioned something about communication, and you said the word escalation earlier. When there's an overt conflict going on, communication can only do two things. There's no such thing as neutral communication in that situation. What you say and how you say it is only going to escalate and ratchet the situation up or de-escalate and ratchet it down. That's it.
When you find yourself mediating, see, for a person like me, hearing the – keeping in mind, right? So like I'm sure somewhere deep down I know these things, right? Or at least they're intuitive enough that I could figure them out. But in the moment, in a conflict, I'm not thinking of the inner workings of the conflict and how there's only two things of what I can say is going to do. It's either going to
escalate. No, and I wouldn't teach people that.
But it's funny because for someone like me, if you were mediating a conflict for me, reminders like that would be very helpful to me, yeah. Right? Like if we went over that right at the beginning.
Yep.
I'd be like, okay, great. And then I would keep that in mind as I'm going through it.
There's a whole introductory phase that good mediators have. And then depending on where you try to mediate a conflict is nearly as important as what you're going to talk about. Whose turf is it on? Is it in a public or private setting? If it's private, is it private enough that my team won't see me crying or yelling if it's a very emotional? Like, there's a lot you need to think through. What are you going to have out on the desk? Are you going to encourage note-taking? Or are you going to share what you're going to do with your notes? People are going to want to know what's happening with all these small things because they're not at their best. They're questioning everything. There's distrust. And they're an adult who hasn't been able to solve a problem in their life, and now they have to go to somebody else to help them solve it. Like, that's tough on the ego. But then people – it's funny because then people will just at the drop of a hat go to a judge, a grown-up wearing a robe, telling them how to live their life. It's just weird. Rather than take the time to have self-determination – to make tough decisions and talk through things with another human that affects their life. They'd rather have typically an old person wearing a robe tell them what they should do with their children or their business. It's insanity to me.
I think that is insanity. And it's funny how that it might take that for someone to accept something.
Well, it does oftentimes. Yeah, mediation ain't a cure-all. Let me say that. There's plenty of times that we might not get anything accomplished because they are so dug into their positions, but you don't give up much by trying to mediate other than some time, maybe a little bit of money for the mediator. You can always go. There's a continuum of conflict I'd always teach students. Mediation is about the third choice from the right. The furthest to the right is violence. We solve our disagreements through violence. That's what every government does. That's their end goal. Not their end goal, but that's one of their big tools. Then you go to the left one. What's the next one? Then it's lawsuit. Okay, I'll solve it by the courts. That's a mandate. We have to follow through and do it. Then one more to the left is arbitration, basically an extension of the courts. Then it's mediation. Then to the left is what I'd call negotiation, formally trying to have a transaction. To the left of that is just communication, informal discussions over trying to solve it. To the left of that, what's to the left of that? And this is how most people try to solve their conflict.
Oh, I was going to say collaboration.
Avoidance. Not talk about it. That's the number one way people deal with conflict. The number one conflict management strategy is avoidance.
So maybe collaboration is a subset of communication, which is the one.
Well, we could get into whole conflict. Well, there's five styles to solve conflicts typically. You have avoidance, You have accommodation, giving in and yielding to others. You have competition. My idea is right. I'm going to be competitive. You have collaboration. Competition, collaboration, avoidance, accommodation. There's one more. Not thinking of it.
So anyway. In collaboration, is that compromise?
Compromise. That's the fifth one. Thank you. Compromise is the fifth one. I disagree with all the traditional models and theories out there. They view collaboration as a separate way to solve conflict, and they've idealized it. They've created this utopia. That's bullshit. Collaboration is great, but it's the hardest because what collaboration really is simply a combination of the other things.
That's what I thought.
When you're acting collaboratively, you're avoiding certain topics, you're compromising on things, you're being competitive with your big ideas, you're giving in to other people's good ideas, and it's not linear. It's messy. Just like dealing with grief, the stages aren't linear, they're non-linear. And so for me, collaboration's great, but it there is no perfect model that currently represents it.
Yeah, if I was if I was drawing it as a data model, right? The hierarchy, collaboration would be made up of those four things. So collaboration would be a level at
the
above.
It'd be more like Maslow's hierarchy. The way there's two things. So the traditional, it came out of a managerial grid, and the two axes are productivity or relationship to productivity, relationship to people. And then they plot out these four things: competition, collaborative, compromise, accommodate, avoid. I think it should be more like a triangle, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, with collaboration at the top. But to get there, it's going to be a combination of everything going on below it. And there's more art to that than science. There can be general principles to try to be collaborative, but how those get played out in different relationships and teams and businesses, it's going to look and feel very different. So what's collaborative in your GRC federal government audit space is going to look different than what's going on at the Post or the marketing club or one of my manufacturing clients. They're all collaborative, but just very differently.
Yeah, because of the different makeup of the sub-elements.
Well, then we think about culture with conflict. Culture is our paradigm, our worldview. How the Ponders deal with conflict is different than how the Schaefers do. How GR Central deals with conflict is different than how SIUE does. How my investment bankers talk about and deal with conflict is different than my construction crews. Who's right, who's wrong? That ties into their culture. If you tried to solve at one of my construction clients a disagreement like a banker and very diplomatically and buttoned up, your shit ain't ever getting selected. Good luck.
Hey, Lawrence, you ever have anyone say they got a case of the Monday? Hell no, man. I believe you get your ass kicked.
Yeah,
say it's right. Like that. But
culture and a group's worldview, their norms, beliefs, values, aspirations, and how they get expressed, the things we take for granted, that determines the type of conflict that's acceptable and unacceptable. Is it overt and direct and candid, like Rave Dalio values? Radical transparency. Everything is a competition of intellectual ideas and only the best wins out. Disconnect your ego from it. Our place is not the best workplace for most people because you have to be willing to die to prove your ideas, basically. Your ego has to, he talks about. Most workplaces are so far from that, it's, you know, pretty crazy.
That's cool. There's probably practices in order to do that too, right? So if an idea is to be argued, it must be anonymously proposed.
Oh, he's got a bunch of principles.
Strip identity away from it. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, holy cow, you want to talk about a complex subject.
Yeah, it is complex, but we don't think it's complex because we do it all the time. We think we're good at it. But when you get a bunch of humans in a room, I can just see the good ideas that are going undiscussed because there's a little bit of disagreement and people don't want to upset the org chart. I mean, there's so many amazing ideas that have just hit the graveyard because people are scared of the org chart and they're scared of hierarchy and disagreeing and reputation management and career security, et cetera, et cetera.
So for me, when we talk about this subject, the most valuable thing to me, and this is a personal thing, has become the taking almost a stoic approach to it, right? So acceptance, I use that word as a big one, and talking about how it's funny how people will, a judge said it, so now I have to accept it, and then they'll just move on at that point. It took that for them to accept it and move on, right? So obviously acceptance is a big one. Listening, right, which I think is a part of removing the ego.
Absolutely.
Not about me. I want to hear this other person really receive what they're saying and even validate it, right? And then and apart with the acceptance is like the whole giving up control thing. You know, the serenity prayer comes
Huge. Yeah.
So with the, with all of those things said, those are the most valuable things for me.
Right.
Because I know that they help counterbalance my natural tendencies. What are the most valuable principles about conflict for you? What are the most powerful things that you've learned about conflict?
Much of what I've learned is come through doing it, man. Through not just – you can't get better at conflict management than by doing it and messing things up and owning up to it and trying to do it better, whether you're mediating for others or you're involved in the conflict. So the idea of admitting when you're wrong, admitting mistakes, and apologizing is extremely important for effective conflict managers. The other thing I'd say is very counterintuitive is start conflict for smart conflict. You've got to know how you respond in those situations. And again, there's an art and a science to that phrase. You, like, not everyone's going to be able to do that well, but you've got to see how you, how your kids, how your team, how the people around you respond to disagreement. You want to learn that and know that and try to massage it and work on that. And so you've got to find interesting ways to get that disagreement out in the open. And there's no universal way to do that, but that's something that I'm pretty good at. Asking the questions that I know elicit the disagreement from the folks I'm working with and just see whether they're able to start talking about it or just in their nonverbals. I could do it blindfolded and I could just listen to how they respond. Up, they're just throwing down eggshells. They're throwing down eggshells all over the place so they can tap dance around these specific subjects.
They don't answer the question. They
all kinds of things. Yeah. All kinds.
Anyway, that's so interesting. That's so interesting.
Yeah, there's a million principles, but the one I would say is you got to be in it, man. As Teddy Roosevelt said, the credit doesn't belong to the critic. The credit belongs to the man who's in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. And that's true with conflict. It's the person who's in the arena trying to listen and disagree and do things more effectively, not the person who's just out critiquing to critique.
So this is a perfect place for me to give my change challenge, which I've been holding on to. And you're giving me the perfect segue. Okay. So this will be great for a young me. It's the person who has conflict avoidance problems. They're always trying to avoid conflict. You know, these types of people have a hard time saying no, right? These type of people are always worried they're in someone else's way or something like that. I read a really great article recently, which is still valuable to me today because I still do avoid conflict, just nowhere near to the degree that I used to. And it talked about what conflict avoidance therapy you can give yourself by doing subtle things to cause conflict. And I thought these were creative, and that's why I want to bring that up. They were things like taking a long time to order at a restaurant, especially if you're in a line and there are people behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Intentionally do it. Even if you don't need to, get comfortable doing that and feeling the tension in the air, right? Take a long time to parallel park. Let some cars get behind you and just take your time, whether you're good at it or not, and let them honk. Feel that.
I like it as long as you're responding in the appropriate manner to the behaviors from the other folks.
Yep. I think the idea of this, it's exposure therapy, right? So the idea is people are allergic to things. Earlier you were talking about how you're allergic to bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Right? So how do you treat that? You treat it via exposure. And so with these things, the what I liked about those, and it progressively got to more closer,
mm-hmm.
where you're going to force better communication between mm-hmm. the people, interpersonal communication.
Yep.
The cool thing was those beginning ones, right, is conflict where you're probably not going to have to deal with the conflict. It probably will pass. But you do become aware that there is a conflict occurring and that other people are have a negative reaction to whatever it is you're doing, and just getting okay with that. Just being okay with that. Because I think that's step one, you know what I mean? And then it goes down the line where you're okay bringing up your disagreement with your boss.
Sure. Right?
Which would be way further down the line.
Yeah.
Just taking a long
time. Yeah, I like that. I explain it as find low-risk opportunities to flex a more assertive conflict management style.
Yep.
And you're saying the first step is you need to become aware of the triggers that get those weird emotions internally going for you. And so doing some of these public behaviors is a way to start to identify those triggers. I love it. And you know me, I like to push buttons.
It's very curb your enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's very curb. My only dislike is that you're using other – you're creating – grievances for other people to improve your own therapy. And I don't know if I like that, but I see your point.
It's true. No, I mean, this article, I'll have to find it because it was so good. It talked about that.
You're inconveniencing others to improve your emotional stability. I don't like that, but I like the concept of what you're talking about. Yes. I have to get that on record.
Yes. I mean, it talked about how, like, that's obviously a negative of this therapy, but it's unavoidable.
If the point is you're so afraid to, quote unquote, harm someone and you view disagreeing as harming, that's a problem and you need to overcome that. But the flip side is do no harm, I think, is generally a pretty good ethic to even bring into most conflicts. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, the person you're talking to now is the person who views disagreement as harm. Like they're a total accommodator, and that's a problematic conflict management strategy. Avoidance is the primary one, but it can be useful. Like, avoid certain things. You just don't need to argue at all. But if you always accommodate others, that's even worse, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because then the one day you put on your big boy pants and you're assertive, people are like, God, he was a prick today.
Right.
Because you've created a persona that you give in and you're easy to be walked all over.
And not only that, you probably haven't built the skill after that. You always avoid conflict. So you don't have any skill once you actually get in the game of conflict.
It's fun, man. There's so much. But we revert to previous behaviors. So it's not just everybody wants to solve conflict. It's just like, okay, it's going to – if you don't address the underlying emotions and identity issues, which are the real ones, everybody in the business world wants to talk about the facts and what happened. Yeah, well, cool. But if we don't address those other things, it's going to pop up again 100%. Yep. So it's all about what's our aftermath plan. When it pops up again, what are we going to do? What's our thoughts? What's our process for addressing it then? It truly is about managing it because it's not going to go away. Like conflict resolution is just funny to me. We're not resolving. Like we might resolve a small thing, but there's just conflict is a constant. It's like time. It's just with us always.
Yeah, and we talked about some of the key components of it, right? Like for me, it's being aware of mm-hmm. it and addressing it and not letting it become something that's bigger, especially when in certain relationships and the avoidance thing too. Still with me today. You know, sometimes it's just like whenever you're in business, picking up the phone, right?
Right.
Someone hasn't replied to something.
Yeah, it's our fear. Pick it up. Yeah,
just pick up the phone, have that conversation. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It feels hard, like you have a negative emotional mm-hmm. reaction to it. I do, you know. I think you might be the opposite. You might thrive on it. You're like,
oh, yeah, I love it.
Call that person. I mean,
I still have a little fear going on, but yeah, usually mine's like aggressive, and I need to temper it back. But as soon as I get on the phone with them, I love the conversation. I get passionate. I'm passionate. It's people are like, man, you're passionate. Yeah, because I love communication, and so if I'm getting to communicate, I'm passionate. One thing I wanted to get on this episode, we won't be able to dive into it though. We focused on the micro for communication and conflict management, which I like because that's where we live. Then you could go macro, how organizations deal with it, how states deal with it. And then we'd get into strategy and that's fun to talk about. But then at the more macro level, which I call the cosmic level, what conflict really is at a cosmic, universal sort of space-time level, it's energy transfer. It's energy. It's like we're all energy. All of us are energy. And there's something going on and that energy's off. And we're not thinking about transferring it and bumping into it. And the sparks that are getting created, we don't like where they're going. And conflict at that level is absolutely about like creating new energy in a positive way. And we're not knowing how to do it. And the negative energy that's getting created from that is problematic. And we don't want to talk about that. And we're holding on to that negative energy internally. And it's subsuming our brain power and our emotions. When if we just get it out, we can create a new energy. We'd add the plus sign. We'd build something new. but it's hard to do. And it's always going to, even for people like me, I'm no master. You use that term. I appreciate the accolade there, but there's things that happen with me. I get tripped up. Like, I'm not perfect in this space, especially when I'm in the conflict. I can be very stubborn and aggressive, and I know how to push buttons and get people off their game and do things kind of manipulatively if I need to. But I love it because it's about learning. It's about learning about yourself, learning about that person. And talk about the art of creativity. If you can manage conflicts effectively, that in itself is creative, because new things, new ideas, new products, new businesses, new relationships, they're built from that manure. But if we avoid it all the time, we're not giving our chance the opportunity to be more creative. That's why conflict's important to me.
One of the things we talked about in our happiness episode was that a key element to happiness is progress. And I feel like where we've come is, you know, I love the energy analogy, right? Because what progress is just a manifestation of energy, right? And if progress is one of the core elements, I believe happiness is but a, you know, byproduct of several things, and one of them being progress, conflict it's almost like it can be the fuel for progress, or it can be the impediment to progress.
100%. Escalate or de-escalate. Yeah. I love it.
So powerful.
Well said.
So powerful.
Well, anything else you want to get out?
I had one more question for you. Let's end on this.
Okay.
So you say that you don't think that you are a master of conflict.
Well, no, let me qualify. I don't want to be the false humility guy. I get it. Like, my education's there. I have a business there. You know, I have a lot of experience there. Am I good at it? Yeah, I'm pretty good at it. But I also am aware there's conflicts I haven't thought about that haven't been created that are going to be over my head. But technical conflicts, you know, I can only do so much there because I don't have the anchor of the language. So I just try to be honest and say, anyone that says I can solve and do all these conflicts for others are full of shit. They're marketing and they're not being honest. And I don't want to be that person.
Yep. So this is not a business podcast, but I'm doing this from a legitimate, like, if people have listened to this episode and they actually realize they want help, even it's at a personal level, right? Like, I have problems. Some of the things that they talked about in this episode are problems that I need to learn how to deal with better, right? Which I'm sure just about everybody, if they're honest with themselves, could. What are some good resources in addition to, and then we'll give ways to contact you.
It just depends on your learning style. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people enjoy reading books, which is fine. But if you do, there's one book you should read, and it's called Difficult Conversations. It's by a group of people who started the Harvard Negotiation Project, and they also wrote a good book on negotiation called Getting to Yes. But Difficult Conversations, how to talk about what matters most. And difficult conversations are usually at the heart of conflict, but you don't have to have a conflict if it's a difficult conversation. It's fantastic. It's not jargon. It's all here are specific principles and practices, things you can say, questions you can ask. Here's how long you should pause. It's very specific actions to take for difficult conversations, and it's a quick read. I call it a business plane read. If that's not your gig, get online and look up YouTube videos from those folks, which is Patton, Heen, and Bruce are the names of those authors. They have some cool YouTube videos out there. The most important thing is just take action. Like, be conscientious. Pick one. Get on the internet and find one thing that a couple articles all agree this is important, and do it. Get out from behind the screen and go do it. Because if you read these things and you're not doing them, you're wasting your time. You won't improve the skill. I could read 25 books on how to dunk a basketball or how to drive a NASCAR faster. If I don't go practice it, it doesn't matter.
Yep. Yep.
So that's what I'd say.
All right. And then if someone wants to talk to you about it.
Just Zach@sparkthediscussion.com. So yeah, I do conflict coaching, usually from an employment perspective. But I have two different clients currently we're working on. We call it leadership coaching, but we're focusing on how do you deal with your frustration, anger, and impatience in the workplace. And we have specific behavioral mechanisms we've created based on the assessments they've taken to help them do that.
Excellent. This was awesome.
Yeah, this was a fun one, man. This was, I'm clearly very passionate about this. Yeah. And I look forward to continuing to learn more about conflict.
All right.
As we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.